Time for a Gaza Corner. We do this every Saturday night around this time. And it's a combination of commentary or reading a news article that I think maybe was bypassed by the mainstream media. And then we play music related to the region that we're talking about. Lately, for the last month, I've been focusing on Gaza. We also focus on other parts of the Middle East, but I will also do Gaza tonight. The latest word I heard is that the ceasefire is still holding, but by Monday, it's anyone's guess whether an agreement will be reached. And from what I'm reading, it's not overly optimistic. And before I get into some headlines that I'd like to share with you, I did something which I've never really done. I send emails, and it's more for me than anything else, because sometimes I just have to work my feelings out. And I send emails to Barbara Boxer or Dianne Feinstein and President Obama, and I get back these just pitiful, generic responses that are meaningless, but it just feels good to write them. So what I did just a couple of days ago was I called up Dianne Feinstein's office because I just felt like I had to talk to a human being. Her letter was just awful. It was just awful. And I just wanted to know, does anyone really know anything about what's going on in the Middle East in her office? I mean, it's just amazing to me how Feinstein and Boxer are such ardent liberals about so many causes in the world. But when it comes to war crimes by Israel, it's just like it doesn't register. So I spoke to a person who said, let me hand you off to the Middle Eastern expert that you can talk to. And I have to tell you, this woman, Samantha, knew next to nothing about the Middle East. It was a joke. And this is our democracy in action. I mean, if you want a job and you know a lot about the Middle East, go send your resume to Feinstein because you could be hired, because Samantha should be out of a job. I mean, it was just silly talking to her. She knew nothing. So this is what we're dealing with. This is why Congress is the way it is. At least my little empirical experiment. There are a couple of quotes that I came across last week that I thought I'd share with you. One is having to do with one of the rationales for the invasion of Gaza was rocket fire, and we have to, any country would respond the same way. It's self-defense, self-defense, self-defense. I came across this quote from Michael Oren, who you may remember. He was the former Israeli ambassador to the United States under Netanyahu for quite a long time. Here's his quote. He says, he's talking about why he didn't think that it was productive for the U.S. to be involved in a mediator role. He says, the best thing that Kerry can do is stay out. We need time to do the job. We need to inflict a painful and unequivocal blow on Hamas. Anything less would be a Hamas victory. That does not sound like self-defense to me. That sounds like self-offense. But this other quote also I thought was telling. I was reading how international relief organizations who are very accustomed to working in hard-hit war zones have just been absolutely shocked at the scale of the carnage in Gaza. And Peter Maurer is the president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, and he tweeted this last Tuesday after visiting Gaza, quote, I've never seen such massive destruction ever before, unquote. The big article that came out this past week, I think, was the article that had to do, was actually broken by the Wall Street Journal, so I'll give them credit. Wall Street Journal broke the story of how Israel had gone behind the State Department and Obama's back to procure funding, munitions as well as Iron Dome funding, but also mortar funding and tank shells. They went through the Pentagon, they were authorized by Congress, but they went behind Obama's back. And the article by the Wall Street Journal, though the headline didn't really, to me, register what the article was essentially about. The headline of the Wall Street Journal is, Gaza crisis, colon, Israel outflanks the White House on strategy. Well, what happened? Then Haaretz took the very same story, but this is the headline of Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, U.S. halts missile transfer requested by Israel. Wall Street Journal reports supply of Hellfire missiles canceled. U.S. officials demanding to review Israeli requests on an individual basis. They got all of that from the Wall Street Journal article, but from the headline, you wouldn't know that that's what the article was about. It's just very interesting. For people that look at headlines and don't read articles, you would never be informed about as to what the story was really about. Some other headlines that I saw during the week, and this whole thing caused a ripple effect. U.S. confirms taking additional care over Israeli arms transfers amid Gaza operation. A Hellfire missile snafu is another flare-up in the ongoing Obama-Netanyahu feud. Israel trying to resolve weapons transfer crisis with U.S. officials. Obama's message to Netanyahu, weapons with strings attached. So this was kind of the focus of the week. I don't know if it's just two kind of immature kids who are just going at each other, or whether Obama's truly, truly saying that it's no longer a blank check and really taking reflection upon how as the United States is complicit in these, I think, what will be determined to be war crimes by Israel. What I'd like to do in terms of reading a couple of short pieces tonight is focus on an incredible woman who is the director of Gaza Projects at the Middle Eastern Children's Alliance, which is based in Berkeley, known as MECA, M-E-C-A. It's MECAForPeace.org. I'm a big champion of their work. I raised money last night when Itamar Erez performed the Tangents Party. Half of the proceeds went to Mecca and their work in Gaza on behalf of children. And the doctor is Dr. Mona Elfara. She is a staff person for Mecca on the ground in Gaza. And she has really dedicated herself to developing community-based programs that improve the health quality and the health services in the Gaza Strip. And she's also the health chair of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society of the Gaza Strip and a member of the Union of Health Work Committees. She's been doing a blog, When Electricity Allows, in Gaza. And this is, I'm going to read two of her entries, one from August the 12th. And these are linked at the Tangents website, tangents.com. She says, Dear friends, I'm writing now from home, but I still feel dizzy from shock and nauseated by the sights and smells on my visit to Khan Yunis and Kuza. Yesterday, I decided to use the opportunity of the ceasefire to visit my family in Khan Yunis. I especially wanted to see my sister, who had open-heart surgery before Israel's assault. I hadn't seen her for 36 days. I'm lucky that I have enough fuel in my car to drive 24 kilometers, about 15 miles, so I struck out towards the south. I drove down Salahuddin Road and past rubble from mosques, houses, and factories. Some buildings were destroyed completely and some partially. Later on in my drive, I saw dozens of big trees uprooted and smashed, fruit trees destroyed, and farms and gardens decimated and ruined. The Israeli bombs were aimed to destroy the infrastructure, to destroy Gaza's economy. Even the main cookie factory was targeted and destroyed. I passed UN trucks distributing food to people in long lines. This siege and assault by the Israelis has made everyone in the Gaza Strip live as a refugee, missing basic needs and struggling to survive. When I drove up to my family's place in Khan Yunis, it was a very emotional moment. We've lost many family members. And excuse me, my friends, I'm not going to talk about this meeting because every family in Gaza is going through the same thing. My sister and relatives decided they wanted to go to see Kusa, a village located east of Khan Yunis. At first, I didn't want to go to Kusa. I didn't want to be reminded of the massacre, to witness more horrors. But I decided to go so I could give you, my friends from the Middle East Children's Alliance, because this is a blog that appears on their website, and others living outside of Gaza, my first-hand account. I know you are following the news closely, but I also know the news might not tell you what has gone on and is going on in Gaza. As we set out to the east, my niece pointed out the devastation. Quote, "You can see where the Israeli tanks were, here and here," unquote. When we came to the village, Abasan, there was an Israeli military vehicle destroyed. Palestinian flags were flying from it, and Palestinian children were playing on it while their families stood watching them. We continued toward Kusa. It was a model Palestinian agricultural village with open fields and green everywhere. They had fruit trees and vegetable fields, but there was nothing left of the village I remembered. The smell and the sights we saw were shocking. The moment we parked and I got out, a very strange smell hit us, the smell of dead bodies. That smell will never leave me. It is still stuck in my nose. We saw totally flattened houses and other houses partially destroyed. It reminded me of pictures from war-torn areas where years of fighting erased a village. I could tell that something huge and terrible had happened here. The rubble and the destruction were extreme. Some villagers told us they had found two bodies in the rubble a couple of hours before we arrived. Still, people were searching the ruins for their relatives' remains. Many times I had to stop myself from vomiting because the smell was so strong. The Israeli assault has hit the Palestinian people more deeply than the last two military attacks. This one is even more deadly and destructive. Whole neighborhoods and villages have been wiped off the map. I ask myself now, how can we start again? Dr. Mona Elfara, she signs off from Gaza with love. I also want to read her entry, which is just a little over one page, from August the 5th. She headlines it in Gaza, "We have lost so many that we love." It's been 3 days, this is again August 5th, it's been 3 days since Israel's deadly attack on my cousin's home, and I still haven't been able to go to Khan Yunis to mourn with my surviving family. The Israeli bombing is ongoing, and it's difficult and very dangerous to travel 18 miles from where I'm living and working in Gaza City. Today, Israel announced a ceasefire, and I wanted to go to Khan Yunis. But we have learned we cannot trust these ceasefires, and one of my cousins called and begged, "Please, don't come. Nowhere is safe, and you don't need to take the risk." There is no safe place in Gaza. I've said it many times before in writing, in interviews, because it's the frightening reality for us. Many families have been erased, and everyone in Gaza is wondering, when will it be their turn? Between 60 to 65 families have been wiped out completely. My family is no different from any other in the Gaza Strip. Part of my family has been erased. We are always wondering, who will be next? Here is the story of my family, just one among many stories in Gaza. Again, this is Dr. Mona Elfara. At 2:30 in the morning on Friday, August 1st, my family received a first, quote-unquote, warning a warning bomb on the roof of their house while they slept. They jumped up, woke the children, and told everyone to run outside. The family lived in a four-story apartment building. 3 to 4 minutes after the first bomb, a second, larger bomb hit the building. Part of the family was outside running into the street, but part of the family was still in the building when the second Israeli bomb hit. My cousin's son, Emad, was trying to bring the children together to move them to a safer place when a third rocket hit them in the street and killed them all where they stood. There were body parts everywhere, most of them children. This series of attacks killed 9 members of my family. Abed al-Malik Abed al-Salam el-Farah, 64 years old. Osama Abed al-Malik el-Farah, 34. Awatef Ayez el-Din el-Farah, 29. Ahmed el-Farah, 28. Mohammed Mahmoud el-Farah, 12. Nadine Mahmoud el-Farah, 9. Yara Abed al-Salam el-Farah, 8. Abed al-Rahman el-Farah, 8. Lujan Basem el-Farah, 4 years old. Also, 10 more people were injured in this bombing, among them one family member, Afaf, who was pregnant and miscarried her baby. The night my relatives were killed was one of the worst nights throughout Gaza. No one could sleep because the bombing was everywhere. At 4 a.m., I opened Facebook and saw that a post about Abed al-Malik and some of his children and grandchildren being killed. I immediately called my cousin Mahmoud in Khan Yunis, and when he answered the phone, he was weeping. Mahmoud is a headmaster at the UN school in that area, taking care of refugees, and he confirmed the news. It was a shocking, painful moment, but this is Gaza. You find yourself supporting someone because they lost their loved ones, and suddenly you find that that same person supports you in your loss. And later, we both support others in their loss. It's like a circle. It's tragic and sad for our family and for everyone in Gaza. Abed al-Malik was one of the father figures in our family. We are a family of refugees who were driven into Gaza when our land was taken by the Israelis in 1948. Abed was a businessman who owned a home painting and decorating shop. Israel is killing and destroying homes, schools, infrastructure, everything. When Germany bombed London during World War II, the English built bomb shelters under the London Underground stations to protect civilians. Even with shelters, the English evacuated hundreds of thousands of children from any area that might be targeted, even sending thousands of children overseas for safety. But in Gaza's case, where can our children go? Where can our people go? We are not safe at home, not safe in UN facilities. We are targeted by the Israeli military just because we are Palestinian. Our Israeli attackers are cowards because they target civilians and especially children. They are trying to kill the future of our people by targeting the next generations. But I'm very proud of the people in Gaza. Despite all of the pain and violence, people are coming together, supporting one another, sharing whatever they have. It's an issue of survival. Israel's attacks are aimed at killing us as individuals, as a country, and as a cause. So I get up every morning because it is my duty to my community and because I know others are doing their duty to keep me and my country and my cause alive. I don't want condolences on a personal level. This is a tragedy for everyone in the Gaza Strip and for every Palestinian. I want people to take a stand and take action to stop these war crimes. That is the voice of Dr. Mona El-Farah, who is head of the Middle Eastern Children's Alliance. They're based in Berkeley, but head of their Gazan project on behalf of children. As many of you know, I go to Turkey every year and do a music tour and bring usually about 10 or 15 Tangents listeners. This will be the last tour this year. After this year, I may stop completely, but I certainly will take at least a year off. There are reasons that have to do with Turkey, and there are reasons because I want to do other things in my life, the most important of which is I will go to Gaza next year. I'm convinced I'll be able to get in, and I will spend about 10 months fundraising and on the ground directly give what I can to people that I meet, as well as institutions, and the university was bombed. I mean, I will do whatever I can because I feel a real pull and a real obligation. I don't know if it's because I'm Jewish. I don't know what it is, but I feel like I need to do something more than just stay here.